Some stations on shortwave sound like they've been around since the dinosaur era, presenting stories the way they did in the 160s, 70s, and 80,000 years ago. Snap out of your Mesozoic mood and switch to Radio Netherlands, contemporary continental radio from the heart of Northwest Europe.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave, cable, and satellite, this is the Dutch International Service.
Media Network, the weekly communications review, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and it's good to be inside an air-conditioned wireless studio, not in my boiling hot office upstairs, I can assure you. Yes, it's full summer outside, and we're not really complaining. We start by looking at the media news this week, and Tetsuo Konda of the Asian Broadcasting Institute of Yokohama, Japan, has been doing some extensive monitoring for us over the past week. It all began at 01 hours UTC last Saturday, July the 9th, when Tetsuo noticed the first signs that things were changing in North Korea. The Korean Central Broadcasting Station and the regional Pyongyang Broadcasting Station interrupted their regular programming to warn of a special announcement at noon local time, 03 hours UTC. And at that time came this solemn announcement. The statement lasted 24 minutes, explaining that the great leader Kim Il-sung had died suddenly. Funeral music, as well as the song of General Kim Il-sung and the Internationale, completed the special broadcast. 24 hours later, the special announcement had been replaced by a commemoration program, including what were claimed interviews with people on the street who were apparently extremely upset. Sounds of mass hysteria. Curiously, the opening announcement of the Korean Broadcasting Station continued to use the regular slogan, Hurrah for the great leader, President Kim Il-sung, although the news made it clear that he had passed away. North Korea has an external broadcasting service called Radio Pyongyang, and not surprisingly, they devoted all their airtime at the weekend to Kim Il-sung's death.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
For senior political scientists monitoring the broadcasts, the formalities of the announcement and even the order in which committees were mentioned was of particular interest.
The Central Committee of the Workers' Party of Korea and the Central Military Commission of the Workers' Party of Korea and the National Defense Commission, the Central People's Committee and the Administration Council of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea informed the entire people of the whole country with bitterest feeling that the great leader Comrade Kim Il-sung, General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Workers' Party of Korea and President of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, passed away at 2 on July the 8th, 1994.
Once again, listeners overseas were left in no doubt of the virtues of the great North Korean leader. During the coming weeks, we can expect extensive coverage of the aftermath of Kim Il-sung's death and the appointment of his successor. Joining me now is Andy Sennett of the World Radio TV Handbook, based in Amsterdam, with the current schedule of English programmes from Radio Pyongyang.
Well, it's quite a long list, Jonathan, but here are some of the transmissions. To Southeast Asia at 0400 UTC, the frequencies are 15180, 15230 and 17765 kHz. And there's a transmission at 13 hours on 9640, 13760 and 15230 kHz. And listeners in the Middle East and Africa can tune in at 15, 17 or 20 hours UTC on 9640 or 9977 kHz.
Radio Pyongyang broadcasts in Europe are rather difficult to monitor, at least at the moment. 13 hours UTC, 9345 and 11740 kHz are possible frequencies. At 20 hours, 9345, which is the best chance, and also 6576 kHz, all out of band.
And for listeners in North America, during the evenings there are transmissions at 23 hours UTC on 11700 and 13650 kHz, and again at midnight UTC on 11335, 13760 and 15130 kHz.
Well, that's Radio Pyongyang, the overseas service. Now back to Tetsuya Konda, who also spent a lot of time checking the other radio stations which operate as part of the political war of words between North and South Korea. In fact, one of the stations, called the Broadcasting Service for the Frontline Sentry, has been off the air since Kim Il-sung died. This station is aimed at North Korean soldiers patrolling the border and is regularly monitored in Japan on 1611 kHz medium wave, as well as the out-of-band channels of 2625 and 3025 kHz shortwave. North Korea also operates a so-called black clandestine radio station called Voice of National Salvation. Presenters on that particular station claim the broadcasts are backed by the South Korean National Democratic Front. But direction finding by Tetsuya and other members of the Asian Broadcasting Institute reveal that the transmitter sites are at Haeju and in Pyongyang. South Korea officially ignores the existence of the Voice of National Salvation, but jams the broadcasts on one medium wave and several shortwave frequencies just in case anybody tunes in. You can hear the results just then. The North Korean external service, however, Radio Pyongyang, regularly quotes from the Voice of National Salvation.
According to the Radio Voice of National Salvation in Seoul, an emergency meeting of the Presidium of the Central Committee of the South Korean National Democratic Front was held on the 9th, on the passing away of the great leader president Kim Il-sung.
This technique of creating a clandestine radio station, supposedly supporting your cause from inside enemy territory, goes back to similar operations in the Second World War here in Europe. And then, of course, there are the number stations. Mysterious shortwave broadcasts of five-digit numbers designed to reach agents outside North Korea continues as if nothing has happened, as well as the shortwave jamming. That report was compiled by Tetsuya Konda of the Asian Broadcasting Institute. From Asia to Africa, and it looks like Rwanda may be returning to shortwave. Chris Greenway, manager of World Broadcasting Information at Caversham Park, Reading in England, says that BBC monitors have noted announcements in the last few days to this effect.
The Rwandan Patriotic Front, the RPF, completed their capture of the capital, Kigali, on the 4th of July. And on the 9th of July, they announced over their own radio station, Radio Muhabura, that they intended to reactivate Radio Rwanda, including the shortwave site, which is shared with Deutsche Welle, and they will be broadcasting on 49-meter band, which we assume to be its previous frequency of 6055.
But so far nothing's been heard?
No, nothing's been heard, but as I say, this announcement was only made a few days ago, and obviously it's going to take them a bit of time to get things on the air, particularly if the German technicians are not there to help them.
Chris also had an update to the item we had last week about the Voice of Palestine broadcasting on 702 kHz.
Yes, but they're still broadcasting on 702 kHz with what they describe as test transmissions. Though an interesting development has occurred over the past week when the Israeli Communications Ministry announced that it was going to allocate one of the frequencies currently used by the Voice of Israel's Arabic service for use by the Voice of Palestine. Now, they didn't specify which frequency that would be, but we have noticed from our monitoring observations that one of the medium wave frequency that the Arabic service is normally on, 675, has not actually been on the air since the 11th of June. And so there is speculation that this frequency, 675, may replace 702 kHz. And one of the reasons given for the change of frequency is that 702 kHz is also used by this station broadcasting from Syria, Al-Quds Radio.
Chris Greenway. No doubt we'll have more on that in coming weeks. Back to Annie for more news from another part of the Middle East.
Yes, you may recall that prior to the civil war in Yemen, there was an English programme from Aden Radio, which for a time was also rebroadcast by the station in Sana'a. That, of course, stopped when tension increased, but now Sana'a itself has a one-hour programme in English, which is broadcast at 18 hours UTC and repeated the following morning at 06 hours UTC. BBC Monitoring says that both transmissions are on 9780 kHz shortwave, plus 711 kHz medium wave, and also on FM 93.5 MHz. Incidentally, there's also a spurious signal on 9069 kHz, and that's being heard by Hans Johnson in the USA, amongst others. As for the station in Aden, the transmitters have apparently been destroyed.
Now for some news from Africa.
And specifically Morocco, the commercial station Medi-1 has apparently made a frequency change on medium wave. According to updated information we just received this week, they're now using 1044 kHz 1044 from a 300 kilowatt transmitter at Sebar Ayoun instead of the listed 612 kHz. Now, 1044 was previously listed for the Arabic service of the state-run network RTM, so I wonder, have the two networks simply swapped frequencies?
Well, if you know the answer, don't forget you can call our 24-hour answer line, 3135-724-222 here in Hilversum.
And speaking of RTM in Morocco, Derek Houghton reports in the latest bulletin of the British DX Club that there's now only one weekly English programme on shortwave. This is on Sundays at 14 to 15 hours UTC, and the frequency is 17595 kHz, 17595. On other days, the English programmes are now between 10 and 12 hours UTC, but they only go out on medium wave and FM. Clearly, there have been a number of changes to the Moroccan radio schedules, so if anyone is going there on vacation, we'd appreciate any observations you have.
Annie, just before you go, I believe there's a radio anniversary today.
Yes, I was looking at this month's bulletin from the Club d'Ondecourt de Quebec, and they have a list of special dates, and I see that on the 14th of July 1930, Radio Saigon went into service in what was then called French Indochina, now Vietnam, of course. The station used 12 kilowatts on the 49-metre band, and also had a 5-kilowatt medium-wave transmitter. And tomorrow, it will be exactly 16 years since Radio Tirana in Albania stopped relaying Radio Beijing, after relations between Albania and China deteriorated. As they say, it all seems a long time ago.
Indeed. Thank you, Andy. In fact, we're just hours away from another closed dam, this time connected with a reduction in American forces stationed across Europe. This time, the station concerned is Berlin.
For AFN Radio, I'm specialist Tom Adams.
24 hours a day, we're rocking Berlin at the speed of sound. Z88FM.
Ray Tumberville is Chief of Radio Command Information at American Forces Network Headquarters in Frankfurt, Germany. He explained to me that AFN Berlin closes down at 08 hours UTC tomorrow, Friday, after continuous operation there since the end of the Second World War. I asked him whether tomorrow was a repeat of the close down last year at AFN Bremerhaven, when US troops pulled out from that part of Germany.
Yes, it is. Just about all the Americans have left the city. I think they had a few there as a result of President Clinton's visit, but I think they're down to something on the order of about 500 people right now. They were only staying behind because of the Clinton visit, and I think they expect within the next couple of weeks to just about practically be out of the city.
And what's going to happen to the frequency of AFN in Berlin? Will it just be given over to the German authorities or what?
I suspect it will be because it was kind of unattractive. It's Mittelwelle, you know, it's the
medium wave.
It's the AM signal.
Right. Oh, I
and,
see.
And they also have an FM signal that's quite low powered and it's kind of up at the end of the FM band, so it was not a very attractive placement for the frequency either. Because of their situation there behind the Iron Curtain, they were the first station that actually went to, for long periods of time, went 24 hours a day to have some entertainment on the air there for the people who were stationed there.
For the best in country and western, listen to the other station. That's Power 1107. We're going to kick it off with the, we're going to continue jamming you with the hottest in contemporary tunes. Here's Dino.
I want the best, I won't settle for less. Since Cupid shot my heart, I'm stressed. The love I feel is...
If you're within range, you can hear the close down of AFN Berlin right through the AFN network, including the AFN transmitter in Frankfurt on 873 kilohertz, which is heard throughout Central Europe. That remains an easy source for most of us in Europe to hear American Forces radio. In fact, engineers at the Frankfurt transmitter site have been doing some major refurbishment to the antenna.
They've done quite a bit of work. They refurbished the thing, and the ground plane underneath the transmitter here was quite old and quite battered. And they have installed a brand new transmitter, and they're expecting to continue work on. They hope to continue work on the ground plane itself, in hopes of getting it back up to. Actually, they're hoping to really, really improve the signal with a new ground plane. Since they've installed the new transmitter, they're broadcasting with 150,000 watts. It does cover the Americans who are left here. It covers them very well.
I was talking to Ray Tuberville. Now, our station ID.
Radio Netherlands, rock and roll radio without all that music.
Yes, that got your attention, didn't it? Now here's Ginger De Silva with more from the world of media.
The Hong Kong-based Asia Satellite Telecommunications Company Limited, better known as AsiaSat, announced last Friday that it's planning to launch a third satellite by the end of 1996 due to growing demand from broadcasters for more transponders over Asia. Peter Jackson, chief executive officer of AsiaSat, says they've signed a 12-year leasing agreement with a Pan-Asian satellite network known as Star TV, currently controlled by global media magnate Rupert Murdoch. Star TV has booked 8 transponders on AsiaSat 2, due to launch shortly, and adds new incentives to get AsiaSat 3 up into geostationary orbit as soon as possible.
Last Wednesday, the British government announced it had decided to renew the BBC's Royal Charter for a further 10 years, when it expires in 1996. Funding of domestic radio and television services by means of a receiver licence fee will remain in place for the time being. But the BBC has been told that the government expects it to become much more aggressive in its commercial activities, such as selling its programmes to foreign broadcasters. The British government's white paper refers to its vision of the BBC in the future as an international multimedia enterprise. BBC World Service Radio says the British government should continue as at present, being financed through a direct grant from the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. World Service Television, on the other hand, should be developed as a fully commercial service. The white paper suggests that the BBC's Board of Governors should include people with international business experience and commercial awareness to oversee the whole range of BBC's operations. The British government minister responsible for broadcasting, Heritage Secretary Peter Brook, seems to acknowledge that there are risks involved in adopting a commercial strategy for World Service Television, and is quoted as saying, "We should not risk taxpayers' or licence payers' money in commercial ventures." Instead, he wants the BBC to work with private companies, such as the Pearson Media Group, with which the BBC is already working on satellite television projects. Media analysts in the UK seem generally agreed that the government's report is an endorsement of the policies and recent changes instituted by the BBC's current Director General, John Burt. But some of the broadcasters working for the BBC are clearly concerned that the traditional public service role may be diminished by concentrating on the commercial aspects. One distinguished BBC journalist, New Delhi correspondent Mark Tully, has publicly announced his resignation from the corporation after 30 years, claiming that the BBC had tried to prevent him from speaking out.
Suud FM is the name of the first private radio station in Senegal. It went on the air on Friday. The opening of this station follows the start of FM relays for Radio France International and Africa Numéro 1. It's interesting that the Senegalese government gave licenses to international broadcasters before they licensed their own nationals.
But what about countries in Africa and Asia which still use shortwave for domestic broadcasting? Satellite alternatives still seem a long way off. Connie Stevens is marketing specialist for Africa and the Middle East in the Office of Affiliate Relations at the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. She's just returned from an extensive trip to Africa to examine the media situation there. I asked her if VOA was planning to concentrate more on getting programmes on FM stations, perhaps at the expense of its direct shortwave services.
I think Africa is a particularly challenging market in the sense that at the same time that you do need to get involved in FM because the urban FM markets are definitely developing, there's also an awful lot of shortwave listening that goes on still in Africa. So I have not picked up a sense here that we're looking to get out of shortwave, but we're definitely looking to get it into FM.
And that's for the city areas too, because I guess as cities expand and there's more, especially electrical noise, it's more difficult to pick up the shortwaves.
Yeah, and I think even more important than that, with the media policies liberalizing and diversifying and the possibility of both independent, international, private FMs going on air, people are becoming accustomed to an FM signal, and a shortwave signal doesn't sound so great when you can hear information as well as entertainment broadcasts on FM.
Do you notice there are vast differences between the countries in terms of how far they've got?
Definitely, yeah. It depends very much on how far the governments have gone in liberalizing the media policy. For example, in Botswana, the only acceptable broadcasting, electronic broadcasting at this point, is operated by the government. However, in a place like Niamey now, for example, in the time I was there in mid-April, and within the last couple of weeks, Africa Number One and a private station, EDAM, had gone in the air. And I think it's since February, RFI had gone in the air 24 hours a day on FM.
Would it be fair to say that it's going faster in the Francophone parts of Africa than the Anglophone?
I think you could make that generalization, but I think it would be mistaken to think that there aren't things going on in Anglophone Africa. For example, during my trip, one of the things I did was I was there at the time that Radio Sanyu, which is a private FM station in Kampala, affiliated with the Voice of America. And they're not the only independent station in Kampala. There's also Capital Radio, which is affiliated with the BBC and which also carries some of our programs.
But if you were setting up a local radio station in your country, would you put out shows from another station at the peak listening hours? Probably not. So are international broadcasters just going to get airtime in the middle of the night when there's nothing else to put out and the local station staff have gone home?
The impression that I've had is that these independent radio stations, you're absolutely right, they want to establish their own local identity. At the same time, in Africa, radio is still the primary source of information as well as of entertainment now on FM. Before, I don't think it played a huge entertainment role because shortwave is not terrific for carrying music and so on, to understate.
Right.
But the fact that radio still is a primary source of information means that these stations want to do both. The difficulty for them as small businesses is that information programming is much more expensive to produce than music programming is. And so there's kind of a natural coalition between the international broadcasters, I think, and the local stations, because the international broadcasters have fairly significant resources relative to what they have locally to produce international news. And so what they're doing is they're using the international news programs. For example, Capital Radio in Kampala is using BBC newscasts, just as Radio Sanyu is using some of our Daybreak Africa program every morning.
Right, I see.
And they're also using the VOA Europe broadcast from midnight to 6 a.m., which allows them to be a 24-hour station relatively economically.
VOA Europe to Africa. Work that one out.
Media network aimed at target audiences above and below the belt. The equatorial belt, that is.
Khmer Rouge Radio announced this past Tuesday it's changing its name to mark the formation of a provisional guerrilla government based in one of Cambodia's northern provinces. The Voice of the Front for Great National Unity of Kampuchea now calls itself the Radio of the Provisional Government for National Solidarity and the National Salvation of Kampuchea. Now that must be one of the longest names ever invented for a clandestine radio station.
I think you're right, Ginger. Now, what about this statement?
It's overwhelming. We never dreamed the market would be as strong as it is. We have interest from around the United States and also around the world.
The voice of Chris Olson, manager of ComFocus Corporation in the USA, recently launched a full-feature shortwave radio that runs on a personal computer. We'll be looking at the pros and cons of such a concept in next week's Media Network, and we'll have a test of the new Sony ICF SW7600G, a portable radio with synchronous detection for under $200. The radio is starting to ship to many markets for the autumn season. A long-time contributor to this program, Media Network, and its predecessor, DX Jukebox, is Victor Gunatilaka, who's on the line from Colombo, Sri Lanka at the moment. Victor, I understand the Sri Lankan government has been lifting some media restrictions with you, and that's pleased some people.
Oh, yes, quite jubilant in mood at Transworld Radio, Vishwavani, Sri Lanka, because the government has given them permission to broadcast in Tamil to South India on medium wave. All these years, they were not permitted to use Sinhala, English or Tamil on medium wave. So the government has changed this, and they're already allowing Tamil broadcasts on medium wave, and Transworld Radio has started up already at 2300 to 2330 UTC. That's 2300 to 2330. Medium wave 882 kilohertz in Tamil to South India, and they are very interested in reception reports from listeners in South India.
Now, we heard earlier in the program how Saudi Arabia is clamping down on satellite dishes and satellite television in general. A while back on this program, you mentioned that the Sri Lankan government was having a pretty tight control on, for example, the BBC news coming via Star Television, that any time there was any mention of Sri Lanka, even in sports items, that suddenly the screen went blank. Has that now changed?
Well, the government made a policy statement recently allowing the BBC Star TV's news items on Sri Lanka to go uncensored. And as you know, some time back it was even going to absurd levels. Whenever the mention of Sri Lanka came on, the screen went blank, even if it was cricket commentary or cricket test cricket scores. So now we have uninterrupted screens and BBC News coverage of items on Sri Lanka, on the terrorist activities and all that. So the government is allowing a free flow of items now.
Is the Sri Lankan government, though, allowing opposition voices to get in front of the SLBC microphone?
Well, not really, but according to the election laws, now the general elections in Sri Lanka have been already gazetted for the 16th of August. Now, according to the election laws, the opposition has to be given equal air time, but not other times. Of course, the leading up to elections, they are given, but not otherwise.
Okay, but so, in other words, opposition parties will get time before the elections?
Oh, yes, they will, and the recognized political parties. Now, this is why the BBC Sinhala broadcast and also Radio Veritas Sinhala and Tamil broadcast are very popular in Sri Lanka, because they get wide opposition views covered in their broadcast, daily broadcast to Sri Lanka.
I'm with you. Now, what have you been hearing on shortwave in your part of the world?
Well, an interesting frequency is Omdurman in Sudan. They've changed frequencies from 9170 and the new frequency 9370, providing excellent reception here in Sri Lanka. They start up around 1330 and go well past 1830 UTC. Sometimes it really amazes me how such a station like Sudan, well, an insignificant broadcaster, can provide such an excellent signal. In fact, they are even stronger than the BBC right now here in South Asia, Jonathan.
Oh, gracious. Propagation is good then. Anything else you're hearing?
Well, the VOA has introduced two new frequencies to South Asia, and that's between 1 hour and 3 hour UTC, that's 1 to 3, and the two frequencies, 11725 and 9635. Well, I suspect these, at least one of these, could be from the new relay station in Thailand, especially 11725. Well, on closer monitoring, I find 11725 and 9635 not synchronized, so obviously they are coming from two separate locations.
Victor, what's the most difficult area for you to hear from your listening post in Sri Lanka?
Well, always it has been South America, Latin America, of course, And whenever we get a good reception from South America, it makes us feel quite happy. And right now, with the sunspots down, we are getting some good reception from stations in Latin America in the 60-meter tropical band. Caracol in Colombia, 5075 kilohertz in Spanish. Radio Tachira on 4830. And Ecos del Torbes, 4980, the last two being in Venezuela, provide fair to poor reception here in Sri Lanka around midnight 30. Well, one needs something better than just a portable transistor radio and a VIP antenna to pick up the Latin American stations. But if you have a fairly good antenna, which is not so difficult right here in the third world to put up, and a fairly decent receiver, it's quite a thrill to pick up these rare stations from South America, Jonathan.
And don't forget, there's a shortwave listeners network for listeners in South Asia that exchanges news and views about international broadcasts to that region. They meet every Sunday from 03 to 04 hours UTC. Look for the network in the region 7050 to 7080 kilohertz in standard AM. And later in the day, there's an international edition of the shortwave listener amateur radio network at 16 hours UTC. The frequency then is 14150 kilohertz upper sideband.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.